From the magic of the mind to the excellence of eternity. This is the Book of the Month podcast from Southside Broadcasting. A whole new area of broadcasting excellence.
This month's book is Children of Ruin by Adrian Tchaikovsky. A sequel to the Arthur C. Clarke award-winning Children of Time, the story is set in the far future, when humanity has become an interstellar space-faring species and begun to explore the outer reaches of the galaxy. He wished he could talk to Han, but he'd cut himself off entirely from their shuttle. He hadn't wanted to be bothered by their constant inquiries after his safety. He was Dizrasenkovi, the man who was an island. Right now he felt his shores eroding. He wanted them to ask so that he could be aloof and not answer. Floating in the dark in the bowels of a dead ship, surrounded by the living and the dead of his mollusk pets, it was a terrible time for self-knowledge to kick in. There was nobody but the octopi, though, and he felt they were judging him. He was their higher power, after all, who should have ensured that they didn't steal so much fire from heaven that they ended up burning everything to the ground. He went from tank to tank, restoring warmth and circulation wherever he found live contents. At least a third were already non-viable, either because of the fatal ingenuity of the occupants or because he was too slow. He had thought of the ship as a tomb before, and now it was. And still, the ship was restoring its system, the naive curiosity of the octopi purged from it, and he had hours yet before he could even get a progress report. His own suit was still toasty, but eventually the ship's warmth would start to leach away, and he would learn if he had enough batteries to overcome his own hubris. He settled down beside Paul's tank, anchored himself there, and turned off his lamps to conserve power. Baltiel waited for the alienness to strike him, stepping from the shuttle's airlock onto the surface of Nod. They could have jockeyed down close enough for the automatics to line up a tunnel between ship and habitat, and Baltiel had nixed the idea because of the slim chance that a slip might have damaged one or the other. In truth, though, he had wanted this. The first foot put down onto another living world, the feel of the atmosphere clenching about him, the gravity, the colour of the sunlight. And he stood there at the foot of the ramp. And there was nothing. Almost nothing. So, it wasn't Earth. Neither had the artificial gravity of the Aegean bin, or the orbiting module, which had never quite matched its parent ship for no reason they could ever find. The orange-red of the sun was compensated for by the visor display of his helmet. He could look across the flat expanse of the great salt marsh, all its rivulets and pools and rocky ridges, out to the great darkness of the sea, and he might just be at a somewhat unattractive beach back home. A suit was insulating him from everything, not just a potentially hazardous atmosphere and the radiation of an alien star, but the smells, the sounds, the unalloyed sights that would make it all real. It might just be an underwhelming simulation. The macroverse created in the text clearly fits within the notions of hard science fiction and resonates with the work of contemporary writers such as Stephen Baxter and Kim Stanley Robinson. Also, the manner in which the author addresses interspecies communication and the challenges inherent in dealing with arthropods, mollusks, and humans makes for a fascinating and gripping narrative. The almost incidental destruction of Earth is handled with craft and elegance. Following the narrative with sentient octopuses, spiders, and ant-oriented artificial intelligences can at first be challenging, but the clear allegorical parallels with contemporary Earth-based politics with conflicting agendas make for a rewarding experience. Elements such as the Rus Caliph virus, the technologies of the Porteids, and the evolution of the octopus civilization. He is scurrying along a bridge of bright strands beneath the moon. 2 feet, 8 feet, the warmth of a tropical night around him and the stars half devoured by the shadows of trees. One of those stars is moving, and part of him recalls that this is Kern, the Bryn 2 sentry pod in its forever orbit, still waiting for the monkey minds below to call to their creator. In that moment of clarity, his pursuers are nipping at his heels, and he forces himself to forget, to have 8 legs so he can make the jump to a higher bridge, to the bulging underside of a shabby pier house, to the trunk of one of the great trees. And all the while, they are after him, spreading out, trying to narrow down his options until he runs out. He is not Fabian, but this is one of Fabian's understandings. It has been carried through the generations, male to male, for centuries. It is not banned, the Portides do not formally censor, but it is impossible to obtain openly, frowned on, social suicide to talk about. It is the understanding of a male being hunted by females, back when that was a fond sport of young, well-bred Portied scions. Five daughters of important houses are competing to bring him down and ceremonially drain his vital juices as a celebration of good old traditions. And yet, he knows that another force is reaching for him through the ancient spider memory of his huntresses. He knows there is something behind all these things, these bad memories that are his refuge and his torment. Each memory he flees through is dismantled and devoured by something that grows only more determined to catch him. When it is very close, when he must break through to the next nightmare or perish, he can feel it all around him. A seething cognition that calls itself many names and can never be escaped because it is inside him. And inside also means all around, because he is inside himself too. Too much rational thought, grabbing hold of memories and cognitive tools that are just anchors to him now. Run! Screams his hindbrain, and he runs, bursting through the ancient understanding to the time when he was about to be passed over for a research post, to when he had angered a prominent Portied scientist, whose merest leg twitch could have relegated him to obscurity forever, to Fabian dancing for female acceptance, and hating himself over and over, pursued by humans, by Portieds, by the very concepts of shame and dread and self-loathing, until... He isn't sure if he is too slow or if the other has some epiphany, but the world around him clenches and deconstructs himself. For a moment he is nothing, of nowhere, on the point of ceasing to exist as anything independent of the thing that pursues him. He feels the crest of its wave putting him in its shadow and cannot brace for the impact because there is nothing of him left to brace. Although there is ample material which could be developed into a third book, Children of Ruin can be read as a standalone text. Ultimately, if what is being sought is a gripping journey into the realms of the far future, grounded in the evolutionary and political world of present-day Earth, Children of Ruin is well worth accessing and will prove to be a splendid reading experience over the holiday period. A welcome addition to the hard science fiction canon, it may even make the reader ponder and seek out current information on the arachnids and octopuses of present-day Earth, as well as other hitherto stereotypical fauna we share the planet with.
Strokes affect 130,000 people in England and Wales each year. Here's a recipe that can dramatically decrease your chances of strokes.
Excellent. I better get a pen.
167 grams of calcium, 225
grams of magnesium, 3 resorbs. Hang on. Hang on, slow down.
And one tablespoon. Remember, any more than one tablespoon could kill you. Any less than one tablespoon could kill you.
Right, that's the recipe.
Oh, if you would like a more simple solution, you can always call Pharma Nord on 01670 519989.
All right.
Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
Let me see if I can jot that down. What was the number again?
01670 519989. Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
And how do you spell Pharma Nord, I wonder?
pharmanord.co.uk.
It's almost as if I'm having a conversation with the radio.
Don't be silly, that's impossible.
Pharma Nord, winning the war of nutrition.
You're listening to a Southside Broadcasting podcast. Southside Broadcasting is a media company which aims to provide a wide range of features from the rural, health and lifestyle worlds. You can regularly listen to entertaining podcasts with interviews and correspondence from Los Angeles, Nashville, New York, and London. You can take part in our Book of the Month features, grab some great nutritional advice, enjoy broadcasts from the Great Yorkshire Show, the Lincolnshire Show, and enjoy local football reviews with our regular feature, Fly Me to the Moon. You can even hear a BAFTA award-winning director drive a train full of teddy bears. You can listen to these and many more podcasts at southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. For further information on how you can join over 35,000 people who regularly download our podcasts, call us on 01642 854 742 or email info@southsidebroadcasting.com now.
In today's crowded world, it's sometimes hard to get heard. And sometimes you need a little extra push to be heard. That's where Manila PR can help. We specialise in online radio and press for independent bands, with prices to match, and have been doing so for the last decade. So if you have a noise to make, make it with Manila. Visit manilapr.com now.
It's not quite the same doing a Christmas Book of the Month without Jenny Finch, is it, Rob?
Really? No, it's a shame.
It's her show, but yeah. Anyway, in case people are wondering, she's okay, but Children of Ruin was a book she, in the end, decided that she wasn't going to complete.
Yes, it was
difficult for her. Yeah, I mean, and I think it shouldn't be underestimated that it can be a challenging read, but I mean, hopefully, as you say, Rob, once you actually make that effort, it's a big one, it's a doorstop of a book, but it's got some really fascinating hard science fiction ideas in there.
Yes, I think I found it a bit challenge at first, especially not having read the
Children of Time.
Children of Time.
Yep.
And just that you're moving around constantly within the universe, but also within incredible time frames. You can move ahead generations and then move back, so it can be a bit bamboozling. But once you sort of grasp some of the concepts, because it's written with a very easy style, I feel, then there's an incredible amount going on. And as you said in your intro, it really gets you thinking about the present day as well as that projected universe.
Well, I mean, I'm looking at the current edition of New Scientist magazine, the 21st, 28th of December. It's completely almost random. And it's page 17. Predators prompt fish to get big brains. Stress can have surprising effects when there are more predators around. Killifish in Trinidad in the Caribbean grow around twice as many brain cells as those that face no predators, and they do so even into adulthood. There's a lot of sort of areas that there's also on the same page. Artificial intelligence has been used to estimate the maximum lifespan of extinct species and early humans from DNA. So what I think Tchaikovsky has actually managed to do here is he's really tapped into, as a lot of good science fiction writers have done ever since Asimov, Arthur C. Clarke, and so on, into what currently is in vogue in terms of science. And evolution has been like a big game changer. I mean, right the way back from Charles Dickens, Charles Darwin, of course, and coming up with the theory of natural selection and the impact that had, which led to H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds and a whole range of things, Brave New World, genetic engineering, all of the sort of elements that come through within that. And I think, as you said, Rob, the way that Tchaikovsky writes, he puts the reader in the omniscient frame. We, as the reader, effectively see all the things occurring simultaneously with that divine sort of system. We see the challenges of the early interstellar space explorers going to the planet, having the frustration between the chap who's actually in charge of the octopuses, because he had octopuses as a child and he grew them and developed them, etc., and how they sort of go wrong, and the battles between those kind of things and the relationship.
And whether people playing God, perhaps
absolutely.
The guy who's actually seeding the planet, who's actually creating life in that planet, and also you mentioned artificial intelligence. Really interesting themes in there as to when somebody is human and when somebody's artificially intelligent, and when it by degrees and at which point, and I think it's something that has been a theme in many science fiction books and films. Is where the artificial intelligence is trying to reach back for some some part of his or her humanity from the past, and that jeopardizes everything because they want to feel that they're still human.
Exactly, and you know, that coupled with, I mean, I did read Children of Time, but I don't think you have to read Children of Time to appreciate Children of Ruin. And it's interesting, when I spoke to Adrian, he never really originally intended doing a trilogy, your favourite, of course. I mean, there may be a sequel, I think there could be a sequel, but he was quite fascinated because he was looking at how octopuses were being trained, not just from, obviously, in sporting terms, who could ever forget the octopus who actually selected the winning teams of the 2006 World Cup? Yeah, Paul the octopus, etc. Not just from that point of view, but they were trained to actually do basic tasks, work through that process. And it's fair to say, I had never considered octopi, octopuses, whatever plural you wish to actually use, octopodes, as being the same kind of creatures as monkeys, apes, absolutely, baboons, etc.
Or dolphins, even.
Yeah, because they're kind of so different from us.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, the only in science fiction, I think my first experience of an octopus was probably through the series Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea or 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, you'd have sort of octopuses as the villains and so on, like sharks and so on. So I think that was really fascinating. He did it, obviously, with spiders in Children of Time.
Yeah.
And saw how they... And we again, if you've read Children of Time, some of the arachnid intelligence that's actually there, and the ant network, etc., will almost be like reacquainting yourself with old friends, in a sense. So they are there. But equally, the way that developed on one level, and the same thing, that's often been said, whatever your particular view with respect to natural selection, here we are at present, although Greta Thunberg might differ, supposedly the most superior species on the planet, the top of the predator food chain as human beings. And what would have happened if, shall we say, evolution had taken a different turn?
Yeah.
And maybe, as I say, with dinosaurs, of course, it had in various ways. Mm. So, you know, there is that fascination. Yeah. But as you said, the other thing which I thought was really interesting and commendable about this is the way in which we do flip very much. I mean, when the opening few chapters, initially I thought, yeah, fine, this is fairly standard, indeed almost bog standard, space opera stuff. It's a case of frontiers out there doing stuff. And then, as you say, he kind of really takes the concept and moves us forward millennia, thousands of years, to see how things are developed and back, and keeps juggling.
And we do see the way that again, current thinking, the only way that we can travel those distances in time is if we somehow manage freeze ourselves or whatever.
Exactly. Suspended animation. Yeah. And that was an interesting thing in terms of when the early terraformers consider themselves that actually, do they want to actually spend 10 years in suspended animation, or do they want to actually see the thing happening as they're sort of changing the planet as well from
absolutely.
That point of view? It's certainly a big question that, although we haven't as yet sort of managed to master, indeed, faster than light travel, probably never will, maybe we'll, but again, we might do, and certainly suspended animation, but it is using that line of how we could almost have an extended immortality, or just download our consciousness, as you said, into a silicon-based friend, etc., and then you see, is that human or is it not human?
Yeah, absolutely. And what is human? It's a big question, isn't it?
I know Jenny was, obviously Jenny's not here to actually debate this, but she can obviously sort of, it's her show. She'll come back with various other bits and pieces as well. But I think it's interesting that she suggested a book a wee while ago, which we covered, called Grass by Sherry Tepper.
Yes, that's right.
Because it was the alienness of the aliens. I think in a sense, we have the aliens here, but we have created the aliens. And that's another line of science fiction that maybe we are the sole sentient species in the universe, and actually what happens in the far future is the aliens are our own creations.
We do see some very alien aliens though, and we're introduced to them, and they look like they're basically
jellyfish,
and they don't seem to do anything, do they?
Until they start taking people over.
Yes.
Spoiler. But, well, mini spoiler. That's the sort of other area, which, again, I think once, as I say, you get over that first, I'd say, 150 or so pages, that I think it really does motor along.
Yeah.
And it sort of it develops that. Again, Adrian's known for a number of his fantasy writings. This was only, I think, his second foray into hard science fiction.
Right.
I cited Kim Stanley Robinson and Stephen Baxter, who's often hailed to be the contemporary successor. In fact, he's held by the H.G. Wells estate as being the natural successor to H.G.
Right.
He's written sequels to The Time Machine, with the time ships. And indeed, a couple of years ago, he wrote a sequel to The War of the Worlds, which also sort of opened up a range of things. He's written a lot of good stuff as well. But again, it worked very positively on that side of things. So I think we both liked it.
Yeah.
I guess
a big sort of key, sorry, to these things, as you said, a top science fiction writer will address contemporary issues, but then in 10 years' time, does the book stand the test of time, or is it looking through a historical time frame? Because H.G. Wells does, obviously, even though you said it alludes back to Darwin, it still stands.
I think it's still current, it's still contemporary. I think the recent BBC series, although some might say it was just a woke series, they changed all sorts of things there, but it still kind of addresses a number of key contemporary aspects. And I have a feeling that the Tchaikovsky's work will do that as well from that point of view.
Yeah.
Oh, choking you in all sorts of ways. Moving on.
Yeah.
Let's go to that notion, which is well worth just revisiting, that actually, yes, when you're looking at a book, or any text really, but I think science fiction even more so, look at what's happening culturally at the time in which it's being written. And as you say, maybe we should put ourselves in suspended animation, probably together with Adrian, for 100 years and actually come back in, 2120, and sort of see, yes, it's still there, it's still being echoed in that sort of sense. That's assuming, of course, we haven't been overrun by the wonderful world of Boris Land. But let's not go there. heavy political point. Okay, scores. What would you give Adrian Tchaikovsky's Children of Ruin?
I'm going to give it 9. Very impressed.
Yeah, I would also go. I'll go 9.25 just for that. But yes, it was well put together. Reason I didn't go for a perfect 10. It probably needs another sequel. It probably needs a sequel. I mean, there's so much good stuff there. It's almost a sort of it's a positive as to why I've kind of reduced it, because it always leaves with it in the sense.
I guess it's not necessarily a conventional sequel anyway, because we move around in time so much.
Yeah.
At which point does he take
exactly,
to develop?
Exactly. It's the entirety of the universe.
Yeah.
Whether you're a spider tapping with its forelocks, its whole sort of thing. Again, I thought his use of language and the way in which he actually dealt with linguistics and how we actually translate and the difficulty translating between the octopuses and the English, and the way they use colour and the signs that colour. Again, based partly on sort of areas that we've seen now. Obviously, we can teach apes to use sign language, etc., and that essence of communication, I thought that was very cleverly handled, and very, very cleverly handled. And again, I thought it was a genuine pleasure to read. Don't see it as a quick read, though. I mean, it's not something that you can basically sort of knock off on a 2 or 3 hour train journey. I think you probably need to allow a few days to really sort of let some of the ideas sink in.
Yeah, basically. It'll take over your whole holiday, probably.
Yeah, which is what we suggested at this time. Happy holidays. Next month, hopefully January 2020, I believe it's Ionopolis. The book that we're going to be focusing on. Bye. We can't remember. The book is Ionopolis.
It's based on a housing estate, a fictional housing estate to the west of Middlesbrough, and several generations in that estate. But there may well be a little bit of legendary fantasy interweaving in the gritty reality of that housing estate.
Well, there are still people, I think, who are recovering from the notion of Dial M for Middlesbrough, the latest sort of system. So it's good to know that in various ways the borough are continuing to move forward. Keep on reading. This has been the Book of the Month. Next month, Jenny will be back, I would have thought, in the front and centre seat. For now, though, happy seasonal readings.
Being selected by Jenny Finch and her team for the Book of the Month is quite frankly one of the pinnacles of any writer's ambition. Don't ask me how I know this. I just do.